Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to another episode of the Self-Build Plus podcast, where we chat with self-builders, suppliers, and experts about all things home building and renovating in Ireland on both sides of the border. I'm Astrid Matson, your host and the editor of Self-Build Magazine. In this podcast, we'll be talking about windows, and joining us today is Tony Dunn of MBC Projects, a supplier of UPVC and aluminium windows and doors. Tony, thanks for joining us. And we'll just jump right in. Can you run us through the main types of windows available on the market in Ireland today?
Sure, Astrid, and thanks for having me on. So we could really break it down into two types of windows. We can talk about the material of the window, and then we can actually talk about the function and the mechanic of the window. So the most common material that people would be most familiar with would be the PVC option. So PVC windows, they've been around a while, since the late 80s, early 90s, and they've come a long way. They've been redesigned. They've almost reinvented the wheel at this stage when it comes to PVC. But it's by far the most common that you would see around mainland Europe. The second material that's quite common is aluminium. So not the aluminium of old that people might be thinking about when they think aluminium, that kind of cold, wet.
Full of condensation, yeah.
Again, aluminium, you know, they've reinvented the wheel when it comes to this product now, and it's got all kinds of thermal breaks and insulation in it now, which prevents all that kind of moisture buildup. So it's an incredible product. Now aluminium is seen as the top end. So that's, and there's loads of options with aluminium as well. You know, you if you wanted to do big constructions or curtain wall, you can also get aluminium anodized as well, and all kinds of top coats if you were positioned by the coast. So aluminium gives you a lot more options than PVC. PVC would be fairly standard, and the aluminium kind of opens the door to bigger, more technical constructions.
Okay. Yeah. And then there's an
Aluclad. We refer to it as the hybrid almost. Now there's two. It's important for your listeners to understand that there's two types of Aluclad in the marketplace. There is a timber Aluclad, and then there is a PVC Aluclad. So the timber Aluclad, it would be, you know, you grow a forest, you cut it down, you season the wood, you chemically treat it, turn it into profile, make your windows out of it, and then you put aluminium flashing on the outside of that window to protect the timber. The second option is a PVC option, where it's a standard PVC window, mostly made from recycled materials, as most of the windows are now. And then you have that same cladding on the outside. So it's the same, pretty much the same window, but the PVC option is practically zero maintenance. Whereas your timber window, all right, you've got the feel of wood in the house, but timber requires maintenance. And so that they're really your options: the PVC option, the full aluminium option, your PVC Aluclad, which is a kind of a hybrid of PVC and aluminium, your timber Aluclad, and then you have full timber if you wanted to just go for a straight up wooden window.
Yeah, but wood is kind of fallen out of favor, I suppose, because of those maintenance requirements. Is that fair to say, or is there is a market for wood? Obviously, I mean, a lot of people still prefer the natural material and that kind of thing.
They do. You know, it's horses for courses, as with most things. Yeah. I would agree that it has fallen away. People are looking now for something low maintenance, something that's ecological, you know, more planet friendly, if you like. I'll give you an example. Some of the big manufacturers in Europe right now in PVC are recycling old windows and turning them into new windows, so they're not producing any new plastics. And that's important, I think, in this day and age. And also the renewable energy factor as well in producing those windows. They can use renewable energy to produce the PVC windows. Timber, you still have the deforestation thing, you know, and it's, yeah.
Well, everyone has their own arguments. I mean, you know, if it's meant to be a sustainable forest, you know, you cut down to plant new trees and you're meant to, like, you know, not actually raise a forest, but, you know.
Yeah, you could. Yeah.
Hopefully. But PVC doesn't have the best reputation either environmentally necessarily, does it? I mean, you know, they say it off gases and things like that. It can create volatile organic compounds, or, I mean, I'm sure that the products are much better than they were originally. That, mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned aluminium having, you know, some issues with condensation, but the early UPVC had the reputation of weathering in the sun as well from UV. So all those teething, not teething, but like, I suppose all those things have answers now, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the finishes on the PVC windows now have UV filters built into them, so they're a longer lasting. Your color will last a lot longer. The finish on the window will last a lot longer. It's amazing what they can do now with technologies and processes. So, but yeah, we know the PVC is definitely the more favorable option.
Yeah. And then in terms of cost scale, how do all the different materials sit? Like
it really depends on many factors, I suppose. I mean, the mechanics of the window, whether the window opens in, whether the window opens out, whether it's a slider, whether it's steel reinforced or not. It really comes down to different factors that you'd have to kind of assess when you're making your decision on the windows. You can have a cheap PVC window, which is very basic, and you can have a very expensive PVC window that's highly engineered, triple gasket, for example, seven chambers, and it's, you know, Seaside top coat hardware in the mechanics of the window, in the locking system and the hinges, and that could produce a very expensive window. Some might see it, you know, value for money, but then that might also work out a little bit more expensive than, let's say, a standard aluminium. But the rule of thumb generally is PVC would be your cheapest option. I don't really like to use the word cheap, but it's the more affordable option in terms of choosing your windows. After that, then, would be the hybrids, so your Aluclads, and then aluminium is coming out at the most expensive at the moment. Rule of thumb, generally the difference between PVC and full-on aluminium would be around 30 to 35% more for aluminium, and your Aluclad would sit somewhere in between, around 15 to 20% more expensive than PVC.
Okay. And there's also something, isn't there, about sizes? So as you mentioned, the aluminium can kind of take pretty much, if you want a huge picture window that takes your whole whole wall, that's, yeah, you kind of have to go with aluminium for that. There's no real other option. Not right. Are there limits for PVC and then Aluclad and then aluminium? Is there a weight issue in terms of what the materials can do? And
There is, again, depending on what company you go with, and this is why it's important to do the research. If you have one of those big picture windows, which we commonly see on most sets of drawings that come across our desk, you have that big picture window and capturing the view. In PVC, on the systems we use, the European systems, you can go to 7 square meters, so a 3.5 wide by 2 meters high, one unit of glass, triple glazed. That's pretty much the maximum you can do in PVC in the higher end frame. If you want a warranty with the window, if you're willing to surrender your warranty, then you know you can go a little bit bigger, maybe 7.5 to even 8 meters. In aluminium, it's really down to how big you can make the glass. You know, whatever's the maximum size of a glass unit can be made. Again, different glass suppliers have their limits. We've done glass up to 9 square meters, one picture window up to 9 square meters, but it'd have to be an aluminium frame. That aluminium frame is a lot stronger. And it's built to take the weight, to take the wind pressure. People don't realize that. Often when you frame these views, these beautiful views that people are building into their houses now, it's normally very exposed. It's always the exposed view. It's the mountains, it's the hills, it's the beach, it's the coast. And you find that the wind pressures and the weather pressure on that glass is a lot higher. Because there's no shelter. There's no point in putting a picture window somewhere where, you know, you're just looking out at, you know, 30 feet away from the house and you've got a bunch of trees. It's normally the rolling mountains, the landscape. So there's a lot of wind pressure on that glass. So it needs an aluminium frame to support it.
Okay. And how about sliders then? Same restrictions in terms of, you know, the tilt, the sliding windows that open the back doors that everyone wants in their extension.
it's getting increasingly difficult to talk about this without doing self-marketing for our own products. But again, it depends on the company you talk to. There is different systems available. One of the best systems in Europe right now is the VEKA system, VEKA, if people want to kind of do a bit of research. That's a profile development company, and they're doing some great things with developing their profiles in PVC to do more. And there is limits in PVC sliders, for example. If you were to go for something real premium on the PVC end, you can get up to 6 meters on a two-door configuration. So i.e. if you had your sliding door, one door is fixed, one door is sliding, just two units of glass, you can go up to 6 meters. So each one of those doors can be 3 meters wide. That's colossal for PVC, but that's about the max. You can go to 6.5 meters wide if you go for a four-door configuration, i.e. that you have far left, a fixed unit, far right, you have a fixed unit, and the two doors open symmetrically from the middle out. So that would be a four-door configuration, and you can go to 6.5 meters on one of those setups on PVC. And then if you went for an aluminium option, you know, world's your oyster. I mean, we've done them ourselves up to 12 meters wide in a three-door configuration. So, you know, the aluminium really, like we talked about earlier, the aluminium for your big constructions and your curtain walls and your oversized sliders, aluminium is the way to go. It has to be.
And how about Aluclad? Is it similar to aluminium? Can it go as big?
No, Aluclad would follow the same ruling as PVC, because what's underneath that aluminium cladding is your PVC window or your timber. Now, there is some things we don't do timber ourselves, but there is some really good stuff that I've seen done in timber, but the problem comes then with maintenance. You know, if you go for a massive sliding door in timber, it would want to be made of the best timber. It would have to be regularly maintained more than anything else that you know, more than the aluminium, more than the PVC. It really needs to be looked after, because the moment it falls towards failure, it's a slidey slope on the wood. I actually have a neighbor of mine. He got timber windows in about 10 years ago, and he didn't keep up the maintenance on one of the windows, and the water started to break in, and then it's, yeah, the timber itself started to swell. He had mold on the inside. The gaskets then failed. The hardware had all gone rusty inside the window. And there was just absolutely, despite my best efforts and being in this business 30 years, I just wasn't able to save the window at all. And in the end, he ended up replacing it for a new window. And that was only a 10-year-old timber window. So, look.
Right. So the research is important. You need to get a cladding that actually does protect as well. I suppose the water could get stuck behind the, between the aluminium and the timber then. Is that the issue?
It can do. I mean, the example I'm giving there is just a straight up timber window. In terms of the alu-clad option.
Straight up timber.
Like in terms of the alu-clad, again, it comes back to doing your research, finding a company that can do it and do it well, and look at the build quality and, you know, read the reviews, you know.
Yeah, and back on the sliders, what's the maximum height, like a standard height for a slider? What would that be, and then how far can you go after that?
Standard height for a slider typically is your standard lintel height, which is usually around 2100, so 2100 from the screed level. Mm-hmm. We've seen them, a lot of drawings that have come across our desk in the last 12 months have been 2200, 2400, even on the doors and the windows. So, you know, the head heights are getting bigger, the windows are getting bigger. In terms of sliders, though, typically your slider, we would be around the 2.5 to 2.7 mark, the 2500 to 2700 mark. Mm-hmm. In PVC, in aluminium, on the standard system, about 2,900, and then you've got some elite systems, for example, the Aliplast Skyline, which could go up to over 3 meters. But you're talking massive glass, and that's it's very heavy. People don't realize, you know, when they're designing these houses, that how big and heavy this glass is. So it's a lot of weight that's going directly down onto the track system. So your rollers and your track. So there's considerations. Sometimes, you know, you want a two-door system. You might have to, if you want the height on the slider, you might have to consider going a three-door triple track system, or maybe even a four-door system, just to divide that weight, just to disperse that weight out, so it's not all on one single door. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then that whole triple versus double, for sliders, do you really need triple? I mean, that would reduce the weight, wouldn't it, a double glazed unit? Lose a lot in terms of energy efficiency? And
I think I've done one double glazed slider in the last 3 years. Nearly all of them have been triple glazed. The bigger you go, our theory is the bigger you go with a unit of glass, the more solar gain, obviously, the more heat you're going to bring in through that glass. So a triple glazed option is your best solution to keeping the room a little cooler in the summer. I've seen a few builds where they've basically created a greenhouse, where they've got so much glass and they've gone double glazed to keep the cost down, but there's just so much heat coming into the room that the ventilation system, the HVAC or whatever system they've put in, just actually can't cope with the amount of heat that's in the room, and it can't disperse it quick enough. Whereas a triple glaze system would actually be cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter. So it works both ways. And we would always advise triple glazing on a slider.
Hmm. And what's the cost difference? Is there
between double and triple?
Yeah.
Again, it depends on the company you're dealing with and the company you're talking to. I can only give you the experience of ourselves, and the difference is somewhere between 2% 3% of a difference, because with the way things have gone with energy efficiency, all our factory lines, all our production lines are set up for triple glazing. We produce our own glass, and they're all set up for triple glazing. So if we have a customer that actually wants to buy double glazing off us, we have to actually bring that double glazing in externally, which actually costs us more. So the difference is minimal. So it makes the triple glazing option now more affordable and the best way to go.
Okay. And you were talking about doing your research. So what are the main kind of elements to look for in a window in terms of standards and certs and things that make you feel like you're buying something that's going to last and not mold at the seams?
I suppose it always starts with a Google search, really, doesn't it? you know, and word of mouth, obviously, you know, if you've got friends or family that have maybe done windows in the last, you know, 3 to 4 years, ask them, you know, what company did they use? How did they find them? What things were good? What were bad? What was their after sales service like? That's a big one right now. Customer service is high on a lot of companies' agendas. Ours specifically. So when you've done your research and you've kind of ventured towards the company, or you're looking towards the company that you're thinking about going with, then it's time to get into the showrooms and find and actually go and feel the product, see the product, touch the product, talk to the people that understand their product, you know, inside and out. I think that's always it's key. Don't make decisions just based on what you see on the internet. Go to the showroom, look at the product, and look at the differences in what it is you're looking for from a window. One of the first questions we always ask our clients is, where is the build? Where are you building and where are you with the project right now? It's to establish the need for which product is right for you. You may have your wish list. You may have your desire to go massive aluminium windows. But the reality is when you get into the showroom, you might actually not like them. Maybe the price isn't favorable towards your budget. So it's important to establish where it is. For example, if you're building if you're doing a self build and you were, let's say, inland Tipperary, for example, the requirements for windows there would be very different than, let's say, if you were building down in Carras Éireann in Kerry, where you're basically, you know, next stop New York, you know, you're facing out onto the Atlantic Ocean and you've got the highest wind speeds, you've got salt into the mix, you've got sand being picked up and being thrown at the house every time there's bad weather. So there's different considerations, and it's important to establish where you're building first and what product you're actually, one, what you're looking for, and two, what's advised for that project. So,
right. And in terms of comparing kind of the specifications, would, you know, you were talking about energy efficiency and and that kind of thing, like, and is it important to, are all windows kind of the same in terms of U values? And once you go triple glazed, is there that much difference? You have to go into the details of, you know, how much light is let in versus, you know, how much energy efficiency you're getting. Is that just really getting too bogged down in detail, or is it worth looking at those kind of parameters?
It's absolutely worth looking at those parameters. And it's really important that you ask the right questions to the companies that you're looking at for your windows, and ask them about U value. And if you don't understand U values, or you think you might understand U values, you know, it's important to get an explainer. We always explain it, whether you know it or not. We always try and educate our clients on the differences in U values. There's no two windows the same. So I'll give you an example for the European window that we supply. U values are broken down. You have a UG value, which is the U value of the glass part of the window. You have a UF value, which is the frame part of the window, okay? And they're made in separate factories, and then they're assembled together to create the UW value, which is the window value, which is the glass and the frame combined. And it's the UW value that's important. Be careful when, you know, and again, ask the questions. what is the UW value of the window. Some companies will only give out the UG value, which is the value of the glass, which is always pretty low. It's anywhere between 0.5 and 0.8. A lot of companies would be around 0.7. More the European style, Polish windows, German windows, that kind of thing would be around 0.5. And there is even a quadruple glass system in the marketplace that uses krypton gas inside the chambers, inside the glass, rather than argon gas. And you can get a U value on the glass as low as 0.3. So when you combine the glass together with the frame needs to do just as much of the work as the glass. So this is when we get start talking about how many chambers are inside the frame. So an easy way to explain it is like in the wintertime, and we were always told as kids, like, you know, wear plenty of thin layers, which is warmer than wearing one thick jumper. You remember?
Yeah, and, of course. Yeah.
And the windows now follow that same scenario. So some windows only have 3 chambers inside, 5 chambers inside. A lot of the top end windows would have 6 and 7 chambers inside. The passive rated windows that are on the market would be 7 chambers. And each one of those little empty chambers inside the window frame are a different temperature. So on the outside of the window, the outside chamber would be the coldest, and the inside chamber on the window would be the warmest. And then there's a temperature difference then between those two. So this is how your frame works. And again, when you combine the UF value, which is the U value of the frame, the plastic part, let's say if we're talking about a PVC as an example, and you combine that with the UG value, which is the U value of just the glass, you combine them together to get the UW value, which is the value of the entire window. So once you put that construction into your build, that's the U value of that square of window.
Hmm. Yeah. So what are the other parameters that are important to bear in mind?
That's
the main one, isn't it?
That would be the main one. Yeah. I mean, U value is pretty much is going to be linked directly to your BER assessment. So your building energy rating. That if you're building now, it's actually required for the last part of the mortgage drawdown, for example. So you have to get a BER assessment done on your build to draw down the last part of your money. So it really is important that the U values are shown to the BER assessor. So again, looking for a company that have their CE certs in place, that they're able to provide you with what's called a DOP, a declaration of performance. And that's basically a certificate that's issued by the manufacturers that states that this window is this exact U value. It has this solar gain and it's this system. And basically you give that to you can actually download them on a lot of the European windows now. You can actually just scan the QR code that comes on the window on your glass. So if you're listening to this podcast and you've recently got your windows fitted, look at the stickers that are on the glass, or even open the window and look for a little QR code that might be situated around the inside of the frame. You can simply scan that code and that will download the declaration of performance for that window. And then that would be applied to your building energy rating assessment done on the build. So okay. DOPs are quite important. The making sure that the CE cert, nearly all of the European manufacturers now have all this in place.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Something else to consider would be what's available in terms of, again, where you're building. So if you're building coastal and you require aluminium, you might consider something like a seaside top coat or an anodization, which is an extra thick layer of protection that goes onto the aluminium. It's done through a natural oxidization process, and it allows the aluminium color to last longer. It allows greater protection against the salt and the sand and the wind and the damage that would be done in coastal areas. So that's something to, you know, to consider when asking the questions at your window supplier. Something else to consider would be lead time. I'm not sure people are aware of this, but from I can give you this picture from inside the industry. There is a difference in lead time right now. So this is the amount of time from the time you place the order and you sign the contracts and that goes into production to the time that the windows are actually fitted and installed on your build. There is currently a difference between all the different companies in Ireland right now. There is a difference of 6 weeks to 36 weeks.
Oh, wow. 36
weeks waiting for your windows.
That's a record.
it's
and that's actually, yeah, because windows are notorious for being late usually. So if the actual, if they say 36 weeks, mm-hmm. could it be longer even? Jeez, that's very long.
Isn't it unusual,
isn't it?
It depends on the type of build you're doing and how the businesses themselves have set themselves up to cope with the demand. Some companies have pretty much nailed their flag to the cross and gone completely with big developments. Like they're only supplying windows for, you know, huge housing developers, 100 houses at a time. And their business is set up to just spit out, you know, cheap windows as fast as possible to keep the cost of that big development down. You could potentially be, you know, we're talking about self-build, but you have to also consider the people that are just doing retrofit or renovation work where they have, you know, PVC windows in, let's say, from the mid-90s, late 90s. Those windows have basically come to the end of their life. The units are starting to fail. There's condensation building up around the window because the condensation will always find its way to the coldest part of the room. So your glass is always going to find moisture stuck to it. And these windows need to be replaced. So if you're looking for replacement windows right now and you're looking to get all your doors done and all your windows brought up to kind of a passive spec, triple glazed, triple gasket, as a lot of the European windows are now, and you want a quieter, warmer, safer, stronger window, then you could potentially be waiting up to 36 weeks because that's kind of the slow, dirty work and the expensive. It involves removing old windows. It involves replastering. And a lot of companies just don't want to go near it right now. So again, it depends. Ask the question when you're talking to your window supplier, what is your lead time and where are you with the project? What type of project it is? For ourselves, we're currently 6 to 8 weeks, and it doesn't matter whether you're self-build or renovation. We treat every project the same. So, you know, not every company works like that, but it's important to ask those questions because people are really not going to be willing to wait 36 weeks for their windows.
Yeah. And the other component, I suppose, just the security aspect, what should people look for? Is there's standards there as well, isn't there?
There is standards for security, yeah. And it's again, it comes back to which type of system you want to go for. I'll give you an example of a European system. All the European windows right now, if you go anywhere in Europe, anywhere at all, you stay in a hotel, you stay in a B&B, you would stay at a friend's house, all the windows open in. All the windows open in. They're a tilt and turn system. One of the main benefits of a tilt and turn system is that the sash itself, the part that opens from the window, locks on all four sides. So you have locking points on the full perimeter of the window. So when you turn that handle, it locks in around 11 positions. And that's something that you can get with a tilt and turn opening in system. With an opening out window, it's harder to do because of the hinge system and generally what's used in terms of locking. It's a very, very standard system. So in terms of security, the opening in window system would be by far the best. It also gives that security level also gives way to better air tightness as well. So having the window lock on all four sides actually makes the sealing better around the window. And so you got better air tightness on the product, which is quite important right now because, you know, drafts are the last thing we need. And you know, we're spending so much on energy right now.
And so much on the window. Yeah, exactly. So, and it's easier to obviously clean the window, but they're fast becoming on self builds. A lot of people are going for those, aren't they? Or is there still a market for the opening out ones?
There's still a market for the opening out. Absolutely. Again, it depends on your budget. The opening out system would be considered the cheaper option, but in terms of longevity, where the opening out system has its limits because we are now moved to a triple glazing standard. Yeah, triple glazing and even quadruple glazing is the next era that's coming in behind the triple glazing. So the glass has got incredibly heavy, and with people putting bigger windows into their houses, the opening out system is actually starting to become a huge issue. And you know, you're almost forced to go double glazing to keep the weight down, or you might not, you know, for example, people are looking for, this happens a lot with us. I can only speak for ourselves, but people want full height tilt and turn windows, as in they go from the floor to the ceiling, one pane of glass that you can tilt in or use as a door for ventilation or for a fire escape. And they don't want any horizontal breaks in the window. As in, you don't want any transoms going across the window. You just want full glass, a clean, modern, contemporary look. The opening out system doesn't allow you to do that because there's limits on the height of the opening part. So you have to have this horizontal transom, this piece of plastic bar going across the window, and then it kind of breaks and it destroys the look of the window. So, you know, the security aspect that we talked about kind of makes way for the tilt and turn to be the best option, the opening in system, better airtight, better sealing, and bigger windows. You can go to the security on those windows allows for better machinery within the window, the locking system. So that's the preferred option right now.
Yeah. And just very briefly there, you mentioned quadruple glazing a couple of times. Wouldn't that be, yeah. I thought the issue with that was the weight. As you mentioned, there is already with triple, we're struggling with how heavy the units are. Doesn't quadruple just add yet another layer to...
It does. It depends on the size of the window. And again, going back to picking the right supplier, they've reinvented the wheel when it comes to PVC windows. A lot of the big European companies like Vecca, who we mentioned earlier, have got a huge research and development department. Most of all the European windows that are available, whether it be from Poland or from Germany right now, are steel reinforced. Every part of the window. It doesn't matter if it's a small little ensuite window or it's your large 7 meter square picture window that we discussed earlier. It's fully steel reinforced. So with the quadruple glazing, yes, it gets a little bit heavier, but those windows have been designed around the next era. They're designed around the quadruple glazing. So triple glazing to these windows right now is nothing. It's a walk in the park. They've actually been designed around the next era, which is quadruple glazing. And we're currently at frame thicknesses of, you know, anywhere between 82 and 100 millimeters thick in PVC. So that's the thickness from the inside, from the window board on the inside to the concrete sill on the outside. That window is almost, you know, 3.5 to 4 inches thick. It has 7 chambers inside, steel reinforcement, and it's able to take that quadruple glazing if required.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I suppose the last point to touch upon is installation. There's no point in buying an expensive, fabulous window if there is, you know, poor installation on site. So I suppose window manufacturers normally, if you buy your window from someone, they're the ones who install it. Is that fair to say, or how does it work?
Not necessarily. Each company has their own way of doing it. So it's pretty evenly split. Some companies will have their own fitters. They're on their own payroll and will fit their own product. If you go right down to the level of, you know, the local guy that's just doing a few windows and doors here and there, he has one little van, two guys working for him. The guy that you're buying the windows from, the person that you're buying the windows from, is the same person that's going to come and fit your windows. As you go up the scale and you go with, you know, up to the bigger companies, then it gets a bit divided. So you could potentially end up with contractors. So the window company will employ a contracting outfit that would have, you know, 20, 30 window fitters. They're paid by the day or paid by the hour or paid by the per window, per square meter. And their job is to get it fitted as fast as possible and get off site. The other half then would have, like I said, their own crews, their own window fitters, and pretty much are managed from within. So the project manager, the person that you're buying the windows from, is also involved in running the fitting team and explaining to the fitting crews, this is the detail on this window. This slider has to be fitted in this position. This door is opening in, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's important to ask those questions. When you go to the window supply and you're in the showroom and you're stood in front of that salesperson or the project manager, ask them, who fits your windows? Do you fit them yourselves, or do you employ a third-party crew? The general consensus is, and I don't want to badmouth any contractor here, but the quality is better if it's done with your own crews as opposed to using contractors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how do you check for warranties? Like, I'm assuming most companies say they do supply a warranty, but how does a self-builder know that if something goes wrong, they'll, you know, the warranty will work, or that there'll be some sort of after sales mm-hmm. service?
So it's important again to ask the questions at showroom level when you're or even when you're sending your inquiry in your drawings to the first day to be quoted, is to ask the question about what the warranty is on the different systems. And it isn't a one warranty fits all. The frames have one type of warranty. The glass will have one type of warranty. Doors will have a different kind of warranty. A slider will have a different kind of warranty. So it really depends on, you know, what you're actually putting into your self-build. Windows would have by far the longest warranty. They give the least amount of trouble, especially if you go for a higher engineered PVC system, like a European system. They tend never to give trouble, and they'll last a hell of a long time. Whereas with something that's constantly moving, let's say like your front door, for example, that warranty will be a little bit lower. Okay. A slider, for example, would be kind of somewhere in between. But it's always important to ask the question and ask what their after sales service is like. We have a dedicated sales department in our company, and we have that's made up of technicians and customer service representatives. So one side of the business talks to the customer, finds out what the issue is, checks their warranty to make sure, because we have everything on file. And then they pass it over to the technicians, and the technicians will look into the problem, see if it's a manufacturer fault, or is this something that's been incurred by wear and tear or abuse, which is 50% of the time I would bet. But and then it's handed over to the service team, and those guys we have those guys nationwide going out, and generally, you know, every company's different, but the sense of urgency around, especially if a lock is broken on a door, we'd consider that like code red in our place. Like the alarm bells go off, and we have to get that sorted as soon as possible. And we never leave customers waiting more than 24 hours if they have a lock issue. But
what do you mean by abuse? As in people just. Like what can people do to abuse a window?
What I mean by abuse is In simple terms, when the windows are fitted to your self-build, there is wet trades that will come in after the windows are fitted. Your plasterers, your renderers, your, you know, internal plastering. There is, I'll give you an example. There was a project in Killarney recently enough. They got a very high-end aluminium front door from us, very expensive. And the guys that were fitting the granite to the kitchen, which was several months after we'd fitted the windows like last year. And then we got a phone call with a few pictures, and it was like the front door's been damaged. And we were like, right, okay, so what happened? And it was the guys bringing in the granite for the worktop had tried to turn the corner and basically took a massive chunk out of the front door as they were bringing the granite in. So we'd consider that abuse to the product. It's not something that where the product has failed itself. It's where it's been damaged. You know, plastering trowels, I don't want to get too heavy into, you know, what I've seen out there. I could be here all day telling you all kinds of stories, but some of the plasterers that's out there at the moment, the windows are almost unrecognizable when we have to come out and repair them. You know, there is the drainage is blocked, the glass is scratched, you know, so, you know, there's a bit of replacement
protect
work.
Protect your windows, fun. Basically.
Protect yeah, them leave, well. Yeah, leave that. I know as much as people, I do it myself. I'm so itching to take the stickers off the windows and to take the tape off the frames after the windows have been fitted. Leave them on until the plastering is done. Please, I ask everybody, leave the plastic on the windows until the plastering is done. Protect that PVC as much as possible. And then once the plastering is done, give the windows a good clean and you should be good to go. But if you take that tape off, then, you know, whenever they start to clean around the window or even doing painting or plastering, whatever it might be, any of the wet trades, you're going to have to try and clean that out of the PVC, and that PVC is never going to look the same again.
Yeah. And just the last bit, I won't keep you much longer than this, is just material price increases. How have windows seem to have weathered the storm for a little bit, but what's the story with pricing?
I wouldn't say that.
No, it has not. Yes. Everyone's a casualty of this. So how do prices compare now, let's say, compared to even 2 years ago or last year? Like on an average self-build, maybe, I don't know, 200 square meters or something like that, 250 square meter house.
It's really hard to answer that question with a straight up answer. It's windows are made up of different materials. So whether it's aluminium or PVC that you've gone for, or a timber frame that you've gone for, that they've gone up in varying prices. Aluminium's gone up the most. PVC's gone up a good bit. Timber, kind of all wood. I think we all saw it. If you're a self builder, wood went up in price pretty much straight away. After the lockdowns, and then actually was the first thing to come back down in price. Whereas PVC and aluminium are still kind of hanging up there. You have steel inside the window. So all the European windows, for example, and some of the Irish ones as well, have full steel reinforcement. So that's had an impact in the window. I remember talking to our supplier a few weeks back on a Zoom call in Poland, and we were discussing like what are our options in, you know, trying to keep stabilized costs. Could we potentially make some of the smaller windows without the steel? And we discussed it back and forth, and we agreed that no, it just isn't worth it because we're compromising on the quality, and that's what we want to keep a high standard for. So steel has gone up in price, and it still continues to rise. Glass is like a yo-yo. I just don't even know if I was to pin the tail on the donkey, you know, in this scenario, I couldn't even tell you what the price is right now on glass. Nobody knows. It's there's different glass suppliers. There's been two shutdowns on the Pilkington glass manufacturers in the UK, for example, because they're rebuilding their furnaces, and all that glass supply manufacturing has been pushed to mainland Europe from the UK. So that's kind of driven up the cost as well. So it's really hard to say, but look, if you were to compare it to 2 years ago, you're looking at, you know, PVC has gone up somewhere in the region of 22 to 26% overall, and aluminium's gone up around 25 to 29%. That's kind of the rule of thumb. Timber, I couldn't tell you. I'm not in the timber game myself, but we don't do any kind of wood. But that's kind of where you're at. Somewhere between 23 and 30% is kind of the ballpark. So what we've ourselves have spent doing the last 12 months in particular is those customers that were in with us a year ago or 2 years ago that were planning on breaking ground, you know, late last year, early this year, they've come back to us and they've said, look, these windows now don't suit the budget. The quote that you gave us, which is only going to last 30 days with most companies. Some companies have even gone to 10 days. I went to the builders providers a few weeks ago. They'd only give me a quote till 5 o'clock on some building product. So it's gone absolutely crazy right now. So 30 days is probably your quote limit. So you have to refresh that price now because it's, you know, it's 12 months later. You give them the price. It's now 25% higher, for example. But don't despair. There are things that you can do. There are, if you talk to your project manager, talk to your sales representative in the company that you're dealing with, work on trying to get that price back or trying to find a middle ground. There are sometimes options depending on whether you go, for example, if you go for a window that's white on the inside, just white, standard white PVC on the inside with no foil, and you have your smooth anthracite gray vinyl finish on the outside of the window, that is cheaper than having the gray on the inside and the outside. That's one less process for that window to go through. So therefore it's a little bit cheaper. You get me?
So
it's worth working. You know, we've been downsizing sliders. You know, originally they came in, they were 6 meters wide. Now they're 4 meters wide. Front doors have gone from a full aluminium top of the range, 90 mil thick, super passive to now a composite door, which is a little bit more on the affordable end, and they've compromised on the finish of that door. Some windows, they've gone half the house in double glazing and half of the house in triple glazing. So they've focused their attention to where the sun is coming in the most, and they've tried to compromise that way. And, you know, that's shaved a couple, you know, 2 or 3% out of the cost. So if you do all these things together, it could add up to a big difference, you know, maybe 10 or 15% off the price. You're still getting the same window, the same system, the same high security, high quality, steel reinforced, but you've made some compromises and it's actually brought the price down. Other than, you know, your only other option then is, well, I can't go for the better quality window. I now have to go for the cheapest of the cheap window that all I can afford just to get the windows in, get the roof on, and get the place sealed before the winter. And it's heartbreaking to hear clients having to do that. But unfortunately, you know, the price increases have kind of forced us in that direction.
So how much are people spending right now on a self-build for their windows? What's kind of the average quotes that are going out?
Average, again, depends on which company you talk to. If you were to talk to one of my sales guys, he would say his average is somewhere between 100 and 200,000. In the grand scheme of things, he's our aluminium guy, so he does all the curtain wall and all the big slider stuff. So, in terms of in the general, 30 to 40,000. If you get your windows, if you get a good quality European system, you know, for a standard enough house, that's not too over the top, single story, 30 to 40,000. If you start to go, you know, that's somewhere around, I would imagine, kind of 16 to 24 windows would be in around that, including your doors. If you're up at the high end where you've got 40 windows, huge picture windows, massive sliders, then you're probably the 50 to 60,000 mark. But I think in general, you know, for the average self-build right now, 30 to 40 is probably where you should be budgeting for windows. The days of getting your windows for 15 grand are gone.
Yeah. And where do you see prices heading next, let's say next 12 months or so?
Down. Hopefully, I've got my fingers and toes crossed that they're heading down. I had some discussions with our suppliers in Poland, and they were pretty much, of the opinion that if, you know, the Ukraine thing settles and stabilizes, that if things start to come the other way, prices will stabilize. There's also the R word that everybody's threatening right now, that's coming, which I think we're a bit more prepared for. But and then obviously the inflation is having an impact, and fuel costs. I mean, our transport costs right now are, you wouldn't, I shed a tear every time I see the invoices coming in for the fuel bill. But it's all having an impact. But I think I've got a positive outlook. I think, you know, it's going to be a tough 12 months. There's going to be some things, some challenges, but I think it's the pop in the bubble that we need for everything just to kind of settle into place, for things to stabilize, and then we can kind of get back to the business of building houses again. But it really is down to whether the companies themselves are going to pass on those savings to the end customer.
So is your cause for optimism that there might be a recession? Is that it? That'll kill inflation? Is that what you're saying? Or is it that the actual cost of materials are heading kind of downwards?
It's a bit of both. It's a combination of all those things together. I mean, I pulled together a company meeting a few weeks back. I pulled every member of staff across the whole country into one room. And one of the things I touched on was, you know, everybody's talking about the cost of living crisis. You know, the price of food is going up, the price of rents are going up, and fuel and so on and so on. The winter's going to be tough. And only up until yesterday, where I actually saw it pop up on the news yesterday, no one is talking about the cost of doing business. Now, I don't want to get into too much business talk here because we're talking about, you know, the self-build end of it, but it really is incredibly difficult to keep, you know, everybody happy and keep the bills paid right now, and you know, the increased prices. So things need to stabilize. So I think we need a combination of both. You know, almost the recession, if it does come, will bring the prices down. And I know I can only speak for ourselves. They will be passed on, and you know, hopefully we'll be in a better place in 12 months' time. But I think it's going to be a tough 12 months. We see a lot of projects being frozen right now. People are waiting. If there's anyone listening to this podcast, will know what I'm talking about, that you were ready to break ground, you had your builder lined up, you had all your quotes in, you were pretty much ready to get it up to roof level, and you've made the decision, actually, no, I'm going to wait. I'm just going to wait. And we're getting this quite a bit right now. And I even know some of the bigger, I won't name names, but some of the bigger developers that would be in the business of building, you know, 50 to 100 houses, they've frozen their projects as well, because they can't commit to fixed pricing. And it's the same with the councils as well, because they can't get their fixed pricing in place. They're unable to, you know, get the tenders from the developers, from the builders. And so everything's just frozen. Everything's just hung in the air. So, you know, getting a price from a builder right now, he's going to say, okay, I'm going to build your house for €300,000. That's the way it would have been. Now it's okay, I'm can build it for 300,000, but it might be 400,000. And I'm putting this clause into the contract that if price of materials go up, I have to pass it on, and so on and so on and so on. So because no one is fixing their pricing right now, it's having a huge knock-on effect right across the industry. So we need that recession, we need that stabilization, we need prices to come down, and then, like I said, we can get back to the business of selling windows and doors.
Yeah, but if you were building right now yourself, would you wait?
If you'd ask me that question, I've actually just recently renovated my house, all new windows, doors, and insulation and electrics, and I've tried to bring everything up to A energy rating. I was almost forced to do it because I kind of held off over the pandemic doing it. I think a lot of people have done the same. We've seen a lot of people come in over the last couple of weeks, even that are talking about renovating their windows. So we might actually move from where we've been focused on self builds and big developments now to actually retrofitting. And if the government can get their grants correct and get everything in place, and this budget that they're announcing really helps everybody bring the standard of their insulation up on their homes, because it's not just about bringing the fuel price down. It's about, you know, the conservation of fuel. It's about, you know, energy efficiency. So it's a two-prong approach. It needs to be. So, you know, I would like to see every house in the country upgraded to a passive rated window and door. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, because we're in the business. I think it should have happened long before now, that we have the correct insulation, that we've got correct ventilation, that we're moving away from fossil fuels, and that the government are supplying some kind of a grant or doing something in the way to help everybody do it affordably. Whether it's grants,
but it's a complicated process, I suppose.
They've made it so complicated. And, you know, I brought this up in the meeting a few weeks ago as well with our own staff, was that, you know, the government really need to get on top of this and make it easier to access. So they need to be much higher. The grants need to be much more considerable, and they need to be easier to apply for. And with that, then you'll see that switch from, you know, the self-builders might hold off on because of material prices, but you'll see everybody starting to renovate their houses and move into, you know, a kind of a retrofit scenario, which will, you know, it'll be a bit expensive. It's going to be a bit more expensive to do it that way, but, you know, can you afford to wait? That's the question.
Yeah. Well, listen, Tony, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Join us next time for more tips and advice from experts and self-builders alike. And if you haven't already, subscribe to Self-Build Plus. It'll give you full access to the selfbuild.ie website, including the Self-Build Plus journey, which is your step-by-step guide to self-building and home improving. Your membership also gives you first access to all videos and podcasts, as well as access to our members-only Facebook group, which features regular Facebook Live events.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.